clubhouse.
Welcome back from a galaxy far, far away to the Pod Clubhouse coverage for Obi-Wan Kenobi, the new Disney Plus series featuring our favorite Jedi. This is Paul from Pod Clubhouse, and I'm here with my friend Mark.
What's up, Paul?
I'm having a good day. I got to watch Kenobi like twice, like 4 hours of Obi-Wan Kenobi in preparation for this podcast. So I'm feeling good.
See, the fact that you admitted that means I could admit that I also watched it twice. So, okay. I wasn't going to play my cards.
Well, what'd you think at first blush? What's your first take on the first episode?
Wow, it's just exciting. I mean, the first thing, I mean, there's the prequel cut. I think we should talk about that. But man, that Order 66 scene. I was like, oh, what? This is Coruscant? Boom. And that Jedi Master, I don't know who the heck that was, but those moves, that skill, just that whole scene was crazy. And then the younglings are walking and I see that bridge inside the temple. And I'm like, wait a second, isn't that where Yoda was like, wait, these younglings, I can't do the voice. I'm not going to try.
Not even the younglings survived.
Killed not by clones. This Padawan, by a lightsaber he was.
But like this, you know, these younglings weren't killed with blasters, you know, it was lightsabers. And I'm like, oh, that's that same bridge where they said that. And I'm like, are these the same younglings that are about to get slaughtered? And I'm like, that's how they're starting with this episode. That's brutal.
Yeah, there's a pretty cool shot, like a long shot pulled back in the corner of the temple during Order 66, where you can see that bridge kind of in the foreground, and then below it, you can see just clone troopers swarming, just way more blaster fire than there are lightsabers.
Palpatine's execute Order 66 over and over again. Yes. Love that.
Right. If you've seen The Bad Batch, that kind of resonates with how that went down in that incarnation of Star Wars also.
Yeah. And I kind of thought, whoa, is Anakin going to pop out right now? That would have been insane.
A good point. It came and it went, that scene, but I was like soaking it up because it was nostalgic for good and bad reasons, but they nailed it. It looked right. I don't have any nitpicks with that scene. It looked like they just pulled it out of a unused part of the movie.
And did you notice that one of the younglings kind of looked like a young Reva or third sister?
I did. I'm pretty certain that was her. What else? What else did you think about the whole episode, though?
Ewan McGregor, you got to give it up with the acting. I mean, he is just, he really played sad and depressed so well. I was getting depressed just watching him. I mean, geez. You know, the all but extinct line that he dropped that, the Alec Guinness line, and, you know, just the playing of how he lost his mojo. I mean, that was just great.
It's funny to remember that he's a Scot, not from England. So the accent that he's doing is his version of Alec Guinness's accent, which was not Scottish. So he's doing like you don't not expect that to come out of his face whenever you see him. But then when you see him in interviews and you hear the Scottish brogue, you know, it's like, huh, well, those sound right. But yeah, he fits so neatly back into the character, even though this is a far diminished version of himself from what we saw in the prequel era.
Yeah, there was behind the scenes where he said when he walked onto the set and everybody's super excited, like, oh, wow, it's Kenobi walking up, and he's, you know, he's excited. And they start doing a scene and he's like, he didn't have the voice, like he couldn't do it because he had spent so much time trying to do Alec Guinness. And he finally got it back. Clearly,
he did. I'm going to hit you up with a little bit of unproven, but possibly true trivia about Ewan McGregor and his brother.
Oh, boy. Okay.
All right. You may have already heard this. And like I said, I can't prove it, obviously, but Colin McGregor, who is a pilot for the Royal Air Force, guess what his, I don't know if he still flies, but at the time, what his handle was, what his call sign was.
I don't know, but he sounds like a UFC fighter.
That's a different McGregor. He went by Obi-2.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, and I didn't know that.
If that's true, that is awesome. I don't know if it's true, but it's awesome. Anyway, moving on to something I noticed about this and the second one was it felt a lot like a Western to me. Hmm. And I looked it up to see if there's anything to that. And Deborah Chow has said that she was inspired by a couple of different movies, including Westerns, specifically The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward, what's his name, James Ford. and the proposition. The assassination of Jesse James is about a guy that joined Jesse James' gang toward the latter part of his life and killed him. And then the proposition is a very interesting tale. I hadn't seen this one or heard this one. But it's about a guy, a criminal, who is arrested and he's given two choices. Either he has to kill his own older brother or the police are going to go kill his younger brother or something to that effect. So he's going to lose a brother one way or the other. And these are the movies that Deborah Chow admits to having drawn some inspiration from. But I got other kinds of vibes, a little bit like Unforgiven, you know, that kind of idea where the gunman has given up the gun. He doesn't want to return to that old life, but something calls him back and he has to go back.
Yeah, it's been a while, but I see what you're saying. I mean, it's the call to adventure, the call to, which is funny because Obi-Wan's kind of, you know, I was thinking, you know, his youth, if it was like this magical story of excitement. And I mean, if you were to try to tell it verbally, be like, wow, that's crazy. All the things that he did, you know, ending the Clone Wars by killing General Grievous. And, you know, it just sounds crazy. And then now to see him with the humdrum day-to-day thing, when they panned over and I was like, he's working at a factory. I was like,
I thought it was a crate dragon.
Yeah. Okay. Cause they had the skeleton and everything.
Yeah. And he has that crate dragon call in A New Hope. So I thought maybe he has just like way more knowledge of crate dragons than he ever wanted.
Yeah, but it was cool because it was like we can all relate to that, you know. He had the exciting stories and then he's got this now this day-to-day routine, you know, Groundhog Day type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. it really hammered that in. Wow, this is Obi-Wan Kenobi. This is it was like a disconnect. And then of course later on when he gets paired up with Leia, you know, that made a really good contrast because she's so confident and sassy.
She is. Let's take a look at all of our characters for the first part here. Maybe let's hit Kenobi first, since he's the reason for the season here. As we've mentioned, he is older. He is used up. He is rusty. He has some affection for Luke, but he isn't allowed to express that. But yeah, he's basically a shell of the hero that Mark just mentioned, the guy that was able to kill Grievous, the protector of the weak. That's not on his business card anymore right now.
And, you know, just going back to the beginning of the episode with a prequel recap, man, what they chose to put in there, I was like, okay, why did they put that line in there? And they had, you know, Obi-Wan saying to Padme, you know, don't give up, Padme. And I was wondering why they put that in there. And then, of course, they end it with, you know, in your solitude, I've got training for you, Obi-Wan, you know. And I'm like, all getting all excited about the possibility of Qui-Gon coming into it. And, of course, at a certain point in the cave, you know, we get, you know, Master, you know, are you there? And it's just the space crickets, nothing.
Well, I had a bit of a theory on that. And maybe you can tell me what you think. I mean, why else would I have you here if you're not going to tell me what you, sure.
Well,
what you think?
Okay. Don't have to be like that about it, Paul.
You know, at the end of Revenge of the Sith, like you said, Yoda has a project for Obi-Wan to work on in his exile. And that is to try to reach Qui-Gon through the living force. And my theory is that he hasn't been able to do it yet. Or maybe he did it once, but not since then. And that's why he's asking. That's why he needs the guidance. That's why he's like, talk to me, Goose, all the time. He hasn't given up the faith that he can do it and that he needs to do it. But I don't know that he's had any luck doing it.
You know, I think a big part of this show, and I got this from Deborah Chow, and this is kind of a shortcut, and she probably shouldn't have said this, because I think this is really going to go a long way into explaining the show. And that is, you know, she said they wanted to bridge the gap between the young Kenobi and then this kind of super chill Alec Guinness version, who, as you say, he seems to have really embraced Qui-Gon's living force concept. And I always thought, you know, Qui-Gon was always butting heads with the Jedi Council, you know, and he kept on focusing on the living force, whereas the Jedi were kind of political and they're taking the kids when they're young and they're doing their thing. And then if you notice, I guess as evidence, the training of Luke was just super hands-off. Mm-hmm. They're just like, oh, we're going to trust in the Force. I'm sure it'll work out. You know? And they didn't kidnap him and train him, even though, but that's what we see in Obi-Wan now, you know, as he's talking to Owen, it is, you know, hey, no, of course we got to train him. And so, like you said, there's a huge change. Something is going to happen here. And I agree with you. I think it's going to come in the form of this training from Qui-Gon, but I guess Yoda didn't do a very good job of explaining how to do it.
No, it doesn't sound like it. And that communicator that goes off toward the end of the episode, I mean, it doesn't sound like he uses that very much either.
He looked at it like, well, what the heck is that thing? Oh, yeah.
Right. So I wonder if Yoda even knows where his is.
Yeah, I was wondering if they might bring him in, but I don't think so.
Me neither.
It'd be distracting.
In real life, and I know actors say this kind of shit all the time, but Frank Oz has said, Disney doesn't want anything to do with me. I mean, he was talking about in context of the Muppets, but I don't know why that wouldn't carry through throughout his whole, like, feeling of, I mean, when you make a statement like that and Disney owns, you know, some of your other major characters when you're a puppeteer, they might look at it like, okay, well, okay, fine. You get nothing then. I don't know. I have no, you know, I'm not inside the room on those deals, but he's made that statement before, but about, like, you know, Miss Piggy and those ones. All right, so we have Kenobi. We have various Inquisitors. The Grand Inquisitor. There, we have gone back and forth today in text, figuring out just who he is. After some research, I now see it your way, that even though they didn't give him a very Utapauan forehead and pointy teeth and stuff like that, he is the Grand Inquisitor as depicted in the Rebels first season. Same guy. He's got the same markings, same makeup and all that stuff. It's just he looks slightly different, which is a question mark that a lot of fans had. You know, the rabble rouser fans instantly called the show shit basically on that one decision.
Yeah, I hear you. It was funny. You know, they fly in on the Kylo Ren ship and they get off. And when I first saw that, I guess it was even in the trailer, but when I was watching the show, I was like, you know, he kind of looks like an Oompa Loompa from Willy Wonka for a second there. But I ended up really liking this guy. And actually, he got some heat because he didn't watch Rebels. He said, I want to honor my own version of it. And he said that this, he saw this character as someone who just really likes to hear himself talk. And he was saying, you know, what would that look like in a character? The way he played that arrogance and his intensity, I thought it was very dark side. It came off really well. Of course, he had the big speech in the saloon about the Jedi code and just dripping with.
Right. They hunt themselves.
Yeah, that was great. And, you know, with his backstory, I think he was in a place where he saw the hypocrisy of the Jedi, like when Ahsoka back in the day, to go into some lore, you know, they kind of threw her under the bus at some point, blamed her on something. She ended up leaving the order. And he was apparently one of the guards who was involved in that and like escorting her around, kind of arresting her. That gave him enough excuse to be like, oh, these guys are full of crap. I'm going dark side. But yeah, I'm a big fan. This actor is doing a good job.
Let's, at the end of part two, discuss theories related to his outcome.
Part two. Let's do that.
So this is just his introduction. He's suitably evil, very much in charge, except when it comes to third sister / Reva. Like we discussed in the teaser, there are blank spots in various parts of the lore for Star Wars. And the Inquisitors have been around for a long time in various forms, in both canon and legend areas. But third sister, even though they acknowledge that there's like 11 of these Inquisitor siblings, third sister has been not really filled out.
I think it's a new character for the show.
The thing with her is that she has what the kids would call a real hard-on for Kenobi.
The kids might say that.
The kids might. And the big question mark is why. She kind of answers that in the second episode, but I think there's more to it than that. We will have a theory section at the end of this episode, so we will not forget to talk about theories related to Reva and her motivation and her fixation on Kenobi. But let's talk about her presence, her performance, and what she did do in this episode.
They had her just bring in the hate. You know, I think, I don't know, I heard it, someone else point this out, but it's the Empire's in a place, they're new. You know, we got to remember they're still new. The Senate is still intact. They don't have the power to just dissolve the Senate and take full authoritarian control. So it's kind of a bad look to be walking around chopping people's hands off. Right?
Because well, they're going to... The other Inquisitors had enough of her antics at every point.
And I was thinking the same. I was like, you guys are dark side. Why do you care? You'd be chopping off hands all day. Who cares? But But then I thought of that. I was like, okay, yeah, they're not trying to lose the people of Tatooine, I guess you could say, even though I think that's why they frowned upon her taking those tactics. But clearly she's highly motivated. And I think I heard the actress talk about this as well. There's some connection with her and Vader, you know, her boss. She's trying to please the boss there, you know. I think that's what's happening.
We do get some exposure to Fifth Brother, but he looks very much like a company man. You know, he is also a survivor of Order 66, but he seems very content to do his best to follow his orders. Do you know anything else about Fifth Brother?
Not really. To me, he kind of comes off, and I know he was in Rebels and other things, but he just kind of has that NPC thing going. There's nothing really, you know, kind of a robot voice thing. And, you know, in general, I think the bad guys, the baddies in here, were a little bit underwhelming. And I think maybe they're trying to do that on purpose because they really want the mic drop when Vader comes in.
Right. I can see that. On Team Neutral, we have Uncle Owen. Great performance, though. Really got that gravelly, my bullshit meter is already 100% full every day, and I haven't even ran into any bullshit yet, kind of expression that Uncle Owen had in the few moments that we got to see him in A New Hope.
Yeah, because in the prequels, he was so wide-eyed and, you know, he didn't come off as gruff like that, whereas in the original trilogy, he's like, eh. And I absolutely loved it. I don't know if you remember this. This is going to be, you know, dating ourselves, but back in the early days of the internet, they had this Star Wars rap. We'll have to, I don't know if we have show notes, but you have to stick it in there. But, you know, it's like this Luke Skywalker rap and it's a song and he's going, Hey, Luke, man, quit monkeying around that damn land speeder. You're supposed to be cleaning them droids. And he's like a redneck. And I just, because you remember that scene when they're on the farm and he's like, Luke, you know, and it just made me think of that and it cracked me up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're watching the show and you're a complete Star Wars person, then you know what they're doing out there. But if you don't know, if you're just kind of like, well, you know, I enjoyed the movies and now I'm watching Obi-Wan Kenobi. What are they farming? They're in a desert. Well, they're farming moisture, as it turns out. They have several devices planted around their property that suck the moisture out of the air, and then they sell that. It's their livelihood to keep those machines up and running, but they have Jawas, like you saw in the scene in Obi-Wan's cave, where they steal shit from you and then sell it back to you. You have Tusken Raiders out there also breaking your shit because they will, and other hazards. So this is not an easy life. A nice thing, I think I've read it somewhere, maybe a book, was the evaporators will grow mushrooms, you know, fungi, and that's like a delicacy, but not something that they get a lot of. So yeah, if you think about sucking the moisture out of the air, how not plentiful that would be, you know, as a commodity to try to make a living off of for a family. You might get surly too.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what happened with Shmi and her experience with the Sand People and all this. It's a rough place to live, for sure.
Yeah, not everybody gets to slap five like Boba Fett. we didn't get to see much of Beru, Lars, or little Luke. On Alderaan, though, we got to see the entire royal family. We got to see Bail, Breeha, and little Leia Organa.
Yeah, you know, I think that was connected. Like when we saw Luke and he's to me, it looked like he was racing a pod racer.
Yeah.
And you had Kenobi had the nightmare that ended with seeing little Annie in the cockpit blowing stuff up. And then they go right over into what we think is Leia getting dressed. And it turns out to be, you know, a decoy. But, you know, I was like, oh, there she is, kind of like Queen Amidala, like her mom. And then you have Luke over here, just like Anakin. And it really, to me, drove home. It's like, oh, wow, these are their kids. And then Ben is sitting there going, you know, don't screw up this one like you did Anakin, you know, and you can see that he's thinking that. And of course, Owen is literally telling him that. And I think that is further, you know, kicking the mojo out of him. And he's just he's like, what am I doing?
Both episodes were rich with effective callbacks without being, in my opinion, I mean, people probably argue, but in my opinion, not like overly fan service-y by
subtle.
That. Yeah. Like they worked it in a way that was effective in part of their stories, more in part two, particularly with Leia when we get to that section. But we have in Leia, we have a 10-year-old version of Leia who is super smart, very intuitive. We know, but she doesn't know that her intuition is fed by her perception in the Force. And right. She is able to turn that into sharp barbs against her snot-nosed cousin.
That was great. Yeah, that was great. It was so cool to see the Alderaan shot. I don't know if you've seen some of those, I guess, old Republic CGI cuts that were just really cool. You know, and she's got the mouse droid, fun factoid. I guess Kathleen Kennedy worked on Batteries Not Included, if you vaguely remember that movie from 1987. It looks like
one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you connect that? It's like that little mouse droid was one of those.
I didn't, but it reminded me of it. Yeah, that would have been connected somehow to Spielberg or ILM or somebody in the Lucas kind of wheelhouse would have been close to that movie. I'm positive of it. So that makes total sense.
Yeah, and I thought that was pretty relatable. The Organas and mom is basically like, okay, screen time's over. Put away, you know, put away the droid, put away your iPad.
And King Dad is like a cool dad, it turns out. All right, so that's pretty much our major characters. There is another Jedi in this first episode named Nari. He looked to be kind of a low-powered guy. I was maybe thinking he could be one of those five kids that got out at the beginning, but maybe not. If we meet those kids, like we just mentioned, we think Third Sister might be one of those kids. It's going to be a big deal. It's not just going to be a moment where he says, you don't know what I've gone through.
Mom, please. Please. You have no idea what I've been through.
And Obi-Wan's like, meh, you know.
Yeah, he's like, take a look at my problems.
Right. I live in a cave, bro.
I mean, he had to feel like a jerk, though, because he didn't help that guy.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I don't know that we really saw him react to that, but I mean, that was pretty brutal. He's like, peace out, bro. Best of luck. You know, and then he's hanging from the building.
Well, let's talk about the big events in this episode. Like we said, we got the flashback to Revenge of the Sith. We have Team Inquisitor hunting Nari, the low-powered Jedi I just mentioned.
You know who we are.
Inquisitors.
You know what we do?
You hunt Jedi.
In actuality, I would say the Jedi hunt themselves.
And we get the introduction to Kenobi at what I think is probably a crate dragon. What would you call that? Scavenging, maybe?
One more word, I take it all. Keep moving. Something you want to say?
It's interesting how they would just set up scaffolding and conveyor belts and all that other stuff just out in the middle of the desert because they have so much work in just butchering one animal. That's part of what I loved about Star Wars, just like these highly improbable things that on Earth no one would do, but in Star Wars they do.
Yeah, it was very similar to Rey, you know, on Jakku. You know, the one quarter portion, you know, and you got the hydrated food. And
what you brought me today is worth one quarter portion.
Kind of like day laborers all over the place.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. I liked that too. And it fit in with Obi-Wan's ho-hum attitude and trying to keep a low profile.
In keeping with the type of movie and the type of entertainment that Star Wars wants to be, which is that hero's journey, even though it's Ben, Obi-Wan, who in A New Hope has to be that catalyst for Luke, here he's the one that needs the get up and go. And like we see, like you mentioned with like the strung up Nari and these other events where he's having his ego and his former ethics beaten to a pulp and him having to endure that, he finally reaches a point where he is able to step up. But it takes quite a bit to do that. Did you know that Jimmy Smits was going to be in this show at all?
I did not, but I figured he would be because I know he's been in a lot of stuff and I know he's, you know, pretty pro Star Wars. So I wasn't surprised whenever he was talking to him and they were kind of begging him to help with Leia.
She's as important as he is.
It's been 10 years. I'm not who I used to be.
He's like, just use a bounty hunter, bro. Don't worry. Don't bother me. And I started going, oh my God. I started thinking about old Luke from the sequel trilogy. And I'm like, oh no, it's happening again.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I don't know if you had that same thought. But then, you know, Bale's like, come on, bro. Ride or die. One last fight.
I think there was a couple things that allowed him to do that. There was this fact that Owen showed he would give up his life to protect Luke.
And he also doesn't want him around anyway.
There's that. So Luke is okay right now. And like we mentioned in the teaser, getting himself away from Tatooine might help draw some heat off of Luke. Because there's been Inquisitors sniffing around all of a sudden and even just randomly choosing Owen.
That's a really good point. And I was curious on your take on that, because it's like, that seems like quite a coincidence.
She's very strong. She's very strong and can do the mind reading part of the Force. Not every Jedi gets the same tricks and powers at the same level as everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
She seems to have a pretty good, like in the second episode, she reads Haja's mind. She just does, you know?
Effortlessly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had to think that. I was like, okay, she had to sense there's something going on with this dude, Owen, that she could sense in the crowd. And she didn't know quite what it was, but she could tell. But how could Owen keep that from her? Maybe Owen himself doesn't see the significance of Luke like Kenobi does, because you know, he wasn't in on those conversations with Yoda about, you know, I guess maybe Owen doesn't know how powerful Anakin is, and who knows?
Here's an attempt to over-explain it.
Let's do it.
You are a parent of children. In doing that parenting, you've run into other parents and heard tell of parenting from around the tribe there in Austin, I'm sure.
I was a baseball coach. Yeah, I've heard it.
Okay. So there is this thing where your kid or a kid, let's just say a kid. Let's not point out Mark's kids, because that's too specific.
Connor and Claire, what's up? Shout out.
A kid perhaps has some undeniable situation. Whether it's an emotional need or some other physical need that needs to be remediated, whatever that is. I'm not going to be overly specific here. There's a kind of parenting that will turn it's a blind eye to that and not accept that whatever that issue is actually exists. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
It's possible that Owen is that guy. He doesn't want to see any Force-related shit that Luke is doing. So he doesn't, you know, he just doesn't. Whatever Luke could be, it's like in Owen's black and white mind, he isn't, just period. It just isn't happening.
I like that line where he said, you just want to know if he's showing, you know, if he's showing right. Force powers.
Yeah.
Is he okay?
You don't care if he's okay. You care if he's showing.
It's my responsibility, Owen.
It's like, yeah, because he doesn't, he literally doesn't care. He is motivated to protect his family.
And that's interesting. Yeah, he's not blood, but he is the closest thing Luke has at this point that is able to take care of him. Just point that out to everybody. He's a step-nephew. Yeah, so the big moment here in this episode is the call to action caused by the bassist from the Red Hot Chili Peppers abducting one future senator and general.
You know, when I saw him, I was like, is that Flea? And I
did the same thing.
Baseline started going in my head, just, you know, and then the other thing that flashed in my head was, what's the matter, McFly? Are you chicken? You know, just needles from Back to the Future. And I'm like,
right.
Same and it kind of threw me out a little bit. I'm like, okay.
Why is it that whenever Flea has a role, you have to have that, is that Flea moment? But I had the exact same thing. I don't know that it was the same baseline, but yes, it was kind of the same mental lightning bolt. All that added together equals that Ben is able to leave planet. And were you surprised that he did so wearing his lightsaber loud and proud, open carry?
Good call. I was a little surprised at that, but I got to tell you, there's just something cool about opening up a box and there's lightsabers in there.
Yeah. I wish every box I opened had lightsabers in it.
Yeah. And of course, Anakin's lightsaber's in there. It seemed like he had a moment of hesitation and he's like, okay, I'm going for this. We're doing this. He really is trepidatious coming into this whole thing, but he goes for it.
I love this kind of story of the, like I mentioned, the gunslinger that has given up the life and has to go back one last time. I love that kind of story. I'll always give that kind of story a chance, even if halfway through I'm like, this isn't working out as well as I thought it was gonna in terms of quality or whatever. But man, I'm a sucker for that setup.
No, I like that you explained that, because I didn't think about that. And that's a good point. I bet that's where that inspiration came from.
Were there any lingering questions, big or small, that you had, nitpicks or just like, how are they getting away with X, Y, Z? What do you think?
I'm waiting. I'm like, okay, where's Vader now? But, and I'm starting to think maybe we're getting Obi-Wan set up, and I'm hoping that at some point, maybe we'll go back and we'll get a little bit of backstory from Vader. That would be, how cool would that be?
That would be cool. I mean, they've done that in the other Star Wars series where they've shown elements of story out of sync so that you create a little suspense that way. I wonder if they're going to do that here. That's an interesting thing to consider, because I'd want to know what he's been up to. What is his current status? Does his suit look different? You know, little things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One thing that I thought was curious was that cave that Obi-Wan lived in, and that Jawa just like strolls up from behind him. What? Does he live in like a network of caves where there's just roaming Jawas sort of like selling lemon bars off their cart or what? What? It's not a big deal at all because, you know, we'll probably never see it again. But still, it was...
Yeah, I was kind of confused. I don't know if you noticed. It was like a little R2-D2 telescope coming up. And I was like, because I remember he had R4, right, from the prequels. And it looked like R2. And it pops up and he's like guarding the cave, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I was like, is that R4? But was he like buried in the ground? I was kind of confused by that.
That's as good a call as any, because that is definitely an R2, whatever that is. The other thing that I was kind of interested in was, do you think Obi-Wan is going to use that lightsaber anytime soon?
I think he's going to have to, but you could tell he hasn't touched the thing. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he holds up. If he gets his mojo back.
Have you ever seen 310 to Yuma?
I don't think I did.
It's got Christian Bale and Russell Crowe. Christian Bale is like a former like Civil War sharpshooter or something like that. And he's got a rifle and he's got his family out on the range. And a posse comes through with a criminal. And that is Russell Crowe. It's like the sheriff or the deputy is like, we need more men. This guy is too dangerous. His gang is going to get him back unless we have enough men surrounding him to discourage them from doing that. And he's like, nah, I want to be with my family. And so... they're like, no, you don't really have a choice. You have to come. And so since Christian Bale's son volunteers, then he goes along too. So they keep having these moments where they're shootouts and he grabs his rifle and he's about to fire and he doesn't. And it happens like two or three times. And it helps build this great anticipation for that moment where this legendary marksman finally opens up on the bad guys. So I wonder if we're going to have that same kind of thing here.
That could be a good scene. I could see that happening.
Do you have any predictions based off of this one going into the next one or beyond?
I do have predictions. I mean, we could go back to the prequel recap. That really... I think there's a lot there just as far as what they decided to show. And if you want, I can go on a little tangent with what I think is something that's going to be really important in the show.
Well, then, yeah, this seems like the time.
Excellent. Okay. All right. Well, okay. So one thing they put in that prequel cut was Padme dropping the whole thing where it's her death scene, right? And so Anakin knows nothing about this. He's chopped up on a lava beach.
A Mustafarian vacation spot.
It's like an Airbnb over there. But yeah, so, you know, and her last words were, you know, Obi-Wan, they're still good in him. And that's like her dying wish.
There's good in him. I know there's still.
Is that he comes back to the light side. And Obi-Wan knows this. He's the only one that knows her last words. And we know, I know you played the VR game about Vader. He's obsessed with Padme, and he's trying to resurrect her in that game. There was a lot going on with them. You know, they felt nobody was there to help them. They couldn't marry. It was kind of like a Catholic Church situation, kind of going back to the living force versus the doctrine of the Jedi. Palpatine exploited that, you know, the secrecy they had to maintain. You know, he used Padme against Anakin. Obi-Wan knows all these secrets about Anakin there. And I think that's going to create a huge conflict for Anakin if there's a point in the show where Obi-Wan reveals Padme's final words. And I'm thinking that that's going to be the spark that changes where Vader's at now towards what we see at the end of Return of the Jedi when he's redeemed. I was thinking about it. I think there's some evidence out there in the original trilogy that he was becoming good. Like, for example, in the famous Han Solo carbonite scene, I think it might be Boba Fett is about to like...
he shifts Boba Fett's rifle away from Chewbacca.
There you go. Yeah. And so that's an example of, was he showing some goodness there? So maybe there's a trend. So maybe that trend starts here in this show if Obi-Wan's able to persuade him. So that's my favorite theory about this show and what might happen. I hope it happens.
The kernel of what begins Anakin's road back to the light. It's a long road. I mean, this is 10 years away from Yavin at this point. So
right.
Still a long way to go.
It's like 20 years.
It's a long time, but I can see that happening. I had mentioned something about the younglings at the beginning of this episode running off. There were, how many were there?
There was like four or five or something. But like I said, that's why I was confused. I was like, okay, that girl is probably the third sister, Reva.
There were five of them, yeah.
Five of them? Okay. And then I was, like I said, I thought that was that same area where there was a bunch of younglings laying on that bridge. So maybe she experienced the rest of them get hacked up by Anakin and didn't know it was Anakin. But there's going to be something to explain their relationship, because clearly there's some connection between her and Vader that we don't know yet about.
You know, you and I are just dads, so we don't really have that same kind of like age radar that moms have. But those kids in that Padawan class looked up to be about 7 to 10. It's my guess. And the kids in the Master Skywalker, what are we going to do scene? They looked younger, right?
Yes.
5 to 7, maybe. So maybe there's different Padawan classes grouped by age or midichlorian count or something. But I think that those five have got to be important to this show. Maybe not all five, but some of them. Like we mentioned, Reva, likely one of them. But what about the others? I think they've got to mean something.
That's interesting. There was something in the Clone Wars show where Palpatine, you know, he's been trying to create this army for a long time where he's trying to kidnap younglings and train them, form this dark army. And apparently Ahsoka and Anakin, I vaguely remember it, but they foil that plan, ironically, Anakin and Ahsoka, and he's not able to do it. So I guess his numbers are more limited than he would like. And I guess the lore here is if they find a Jedi, they're going to torture him. They're going to mutilate him. And they're going to give him a choice between becoming an Inquisitor and coming to the dark side or death. And that's the background for most of these Inquisitors, as far as I understand.
The good time gang, huh?
But yeah, it makes me want to freeze frame that beginning. Be like, okay, do we recognize these other younglings?
When I think about Reva and her doggedness with Kenobi, being so creative, disobeying orders and all that, I've got to think that she goes beyond needing to impress Vader. I think that's one thing, but I wouldn't be surprised to find out that she holds the whole thing, the whole fall of the Republic against Obi-Wan Kenobi for teaching Anakin, enabling Anakin to be as powerful as he was to assist Palpatine, not finishing off Anakin and Mustafar, all that stuff. I think she'll pin that all on him, and that's why she's so pissed off. It's not that she's actually evil. It's more like she's angry. that's my guess so far.
Yeah, she did say something like, I want my, you know, what's owed to me type thing. Mm-hmm. I wonder what that meant. It could be that Vader's holding something over her. But I got the impression that she's just really trying to get this win for Vader, you know. But yeah, I'm really curious about that, see how that plays out.
With that, I think that's all we have for part one. Please return for part two. We'll be recording that soon so our brains can stay in this same space. If anyone wanted to find you on social media, where would they look, Mark?
At Jiggy Nut on Twitter.
Jiggy Nut. That's 2 G's, 1 J on Twitter.
2 G's, 2 T's.
Exactly right. And I am at Paul V. Daily or at Pod Clubhouse or www.podclubhouse.com. If you like this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe to this whole podcast on iTunes or Amazon or Spotify or wherever you found this podcast so other people can find it and we can spread our particular kind of Star Wars fandom out there in the world. Because I think we're nice guys and Star Wars fandom gets a bad rap. So let us have a chunk out there.
Give us our due.
Exactly. Let me get my red lightsaber and I'll ask for it. All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.